You are about to enter the pop, pulp, and subcultural minds of several individuals. What may leak into the ether can sometimes be too strange, too confusing for the average human mind. When nerds assemble.
Hello, and welcome to episode 30 of the Nerds Assemble podcast. I'm Emily.
I'm Paul.
I'm Paul, aka Cookie.
And I'm Paul, aka Retroid.
And we're going to be returning to Star Wars this week, having a look at some of EA's activities, maybe returning to Superman and a certain Mr. Card, and then maybe sauntering over to, I cannot pronounce the name, but I can pronounce the name of the video, Tropes versus Women, and the first episode, which got released last week, and our thoughts on it. But first up, okay, so after last week saying that, no one's confirmed for Star Wars or Star Wars Episode 7 onwards, Carrie Fisher went and had this blimmin' interview with Palm Beach Illustrated in which she said, oh, yes, I am going to be in the next Star Wars films. And it's just like, fine, you invalidate our entire podcast of last week. Thank you, Carrie.
We're pleased to have her as a listener.
Yeah.
I think it's a good step.
As long as it's a bit hopeful for having a Carrie as a listener. I suppose it's a good step. I'm not sure about her return. She was kind of threatening, I think jokingly, in the interview with Palm Beach Illustrated that she would be returning to some of the classic costumes from the original films. I was like, I just hope that's a joke, because while she hasn't aged too badly, The slave costume, really?
No, don't go there. That'll destroy all my... No, don't go there.
You won't be able to have your happy time with the memory anymore.
Exactly. Leave it alone. As long as they don't kill off Chewbacca like they have in the books, it'll be all right.
Mind you, they didn't say initially when the whole thing was announced that they weren't going to be following the books so much.
It's always good to know when part of your proposed canon or supposed canon just goes, no, that doesn't matter.
I think part of the issue is if they tried to follow the canon from the books, because of course there's been so many writers on the tie-in books over the years, is the issue of trying to tie down the rights. You know, it could be hard to get the rights for storylines and stuff.
The one I would like to see him to do is they introduced a new enemy in the, I think it's the new Jedi Academy series or something, a new enemy called the Yusen Fong. And they're actually from a different universe, so the Force doesn't affect them. That was pretty cool.
Wow.
The Jedi were totally powerless against them, and their ships and that were made out of normal organic material, so the living ships as well.
Like coral or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
I remember hearing about those, but I never got to read. I read so far of the, you know, the new saga or whatever they called them.
Yeah.
Solo's and Leia's twins.
Yeah, they were in this as well.
Yeah.
Jason and Anakin.
Jason, that's a very Jedi name, isn't it?
Yeah.
The thing is, though, is that Star Wars has always been mostly about the drama, and not about the sci-fi, so it's a bit weird that they're actually bringing elements like, oh, a new race from, you know...
It was a warrior race universe. As well, to be fair. It was a bit weird, but I read the first three or four, cause unfortunately it was them bastards that killed off Chewie.
It sounds like they've just introduced Species 8472 into the Star Wars universe, I have to say.
Well...
Or Species 0898, as I call them.
it all sounds a bit like... I mean, I hope they wouldn't go with that, because then it would almost feel like Abrams is channeling elements of the Star Trek universe into the Star Wars universe.
And seeing as Species 8472 were part of Voyager, I do not want any of that.
Maybe it's just going to be a crossover of all of them. There'll be a whole rift in time, and the universe far, far away is no longer far, far away. It's actually going to appear above us.
Oh, no.
And then they get visited by a Gallifreyan.
Yes! Yes! I like this idea.
You know what? There's probably fan fiction of this nature already in existence somewhere on the internet.
There's probably sexy fan fiction along these lines. And No.
IDW have released some graphic novels in the past of Star Trek The Next Generation meeting Doctor Who.
Yes. Yes, they
I know. I've seen the picture and it's like, yeah, I won't be touching that.
I downloaded the sample because I thought I'd read a couple of pages and see what it's like. The sample consisted of the cover. Thank you very much.
Awesome.
I think part of the problem with crossing sci-fi series is that each sci-fi series has its own unique set of rules and laws.
Exactly that. Just
cannot cross over.
People do it for fun, but it doesn't work for very long. Admittedly, I think one of my favourite crossover type things is what happened with Marvel Zombies over the years. It's the fact they had to cross over into different sort of various universes for that. So that was kind of cool. But I suppose that one time that Marvel and DC came together in the 90s. That time Judge Dredd and Batman ended up in the same comic, which has actually been re-released, I think, in trade in the past few months.
And don't forget Batman versus Predator.
Oh, that too.
I was going to mention that. That one actually worked relatively well.
Okay, so Carrie Fisher's apparently confirmed for Star Wars, and it is just a case of now Abrams trying to get the full hand set. Think of a card term for your favourite card terminology that means having all of the great stuff in your hand at the same time.
A nice pair.
Yeah.
I just hope that he doesn't unbox them because then their value would decrease.
Yeah.
Does that mean they'll be bringing back Warwick Davis as Wicket?
I don't know. I'm assuming that they're going to be offering decent money this time around, because didn't Carrie Fisher get a bit fudged over in terms of royalties? A bunch of them for Star Wars, the original films anyway.
Yeah, it was famous for Alec Guinness, actually asking for royalties over like a one-off payment.
Yeah.
That's a famous case of that.
From what I can gather, Lucas is famous for fudging everyone over.
Okay. Well,
including with the new trilogy, because what was the name of that Brit actor who was the?
The guy that played Darth Vader, technically.
David Prowse, yeah.
Yeah, it was the Green Cross.
He was the bloke who handed over power to Palpatine in Episode 1.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yes.
And I can't remember his name. He was in Priscilla, Queen of the Desert, and Terrence Stamp.
That's the one.
He gave a little anecdote of he got asked, to take the part on. And he was wondering, how much is this going to be? Because it, required, relocation for the time.
Mm-hmm.
And he was told, oh, don't worry, George, takes care of everything like that. Anyone who wants to, help him out.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, oh, right, so I'll get a bonus over and above this, very basic pay packet that he was getting for doing the part. And it turned out that when he went to his trailer and, someone gave him a little nod and said, George has been to your trailer. He'd left a box of memorabilia.
Was it the classic 70s memorabilia, though? Or
I have no idea, but either way, it's just, considering how much those movies made.
Mm-hmm.
And, all the stories that he was making them, on the cheap anyway.
I think at this point we should just move on because we could potentially go into libel maybe at this point. not that we're moving on to that fab a subject, because it's all rumour, conjectures, conspiracy theories. No, it's not what happened with the SimCity servers, rather what the hell's going on with Dead Space 4 at the moment.
Oh, yes.
So for those who don't know, last week videogamer.com had this piece up that was basically claiming that EA was canning the Dead Space series following sort of poor sales of the third game. And videogamer.com were like, oh, you know, this comes from a trusted source, blah, 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 this and that. And then EA basically went sort of nuclear on them, that I think there might have been stealth bombers involved. It was quite the blow up. And this, in a way, it kind of got hidden over last week because of what happened with the SimCity servers.
Or not.
It's just kind of... So it's not 100%, if at all, really confirmed that Dead Space 4 isn't happening. It isn't reassuring that there's the odd article on the internet from last month suggesting that the Montreal branch of Visceral Games is kind of not really existing anymore. It's kind of no more.
Not really there.
Yeah, not really there. It's all a bit unreassuring. Not that I've played Dead Space 3, because I was kind of put off by various elements, including the lack of same console co-op. It's like, let's introduce co-op into this action horror game. What, you know, like Capcom's managed to do for like its last two Resident Evil games. No, not like what Capcom's done for its last two Resident Evil games. We're going to make it so that you can't play it on the same console at the same time with two people. Well, that's just bloody brilliant then, isn't it?
Yeah, because that's never been done. Oh no, hang on, the original Halo and everyone since.
Yeah, that's just... it's just annoying, because I was quite looking forward to the game, minus obviously the microtransactions stuff. And I was looking up to it until the week of release when I found out that the co-op wasn't the same console. I mean, I like... if you've got co-op on the same console plus the option to play online, but I do not like it when it's only online.
Yeah, it should be both.
It's just taking the piss. I can't imagine that the game was any more complex and system resource hungry than the previous two Resident Evil games, you know, 5 and 6. There's no bloody way. They're actually, when you compare the last two main Resident Evil games to Dead Space 2, other than the co-op thing, there's quite a few similarities in the way things kind of happen and stuff, and actually the weapon systems in 5 are perhaps more complex than Dead Space 2. I don't know.
I know a few developers who will probably be crying at this conversation. It's not much more complex.
but it's basically,
you're doing it online, why can't you just do it on the same console as well?
Yeah.
Why should there be a difference?
I think part of the problem is that EA of late has been basically calling bad shots, it seems.
Yeah,
from a gamer's perspective.
Mm. So, this looks like it's full of win. Can we possibly put some fail here?
Online servers needs to be connected all the time.
We'd like to sell the fail for 240 Microsoft points each.
I think we're going to have to mention the whole thing with the SimCity servers in a minute. So I think in theory, everything's pretty much working now. But there was a lot of basically downtime last week because of the fact that in order to play the latest SimCity, you need to be connected to the internet due to a DRM.
I don't understand why that should be the case.
I mean, a lot of
people would be, you know, you can get gaming laptops now. So if you want to, I'm not saying that everybody would do this, but if you're on a long overhaul flight, then the possibility of playing it online, you know, on the laptop as you fly to, say, Australia, would be quite a nice thought.
But
that's all gone now.
Yeah.
Because you won't have a fucking connection.
I was going to say, the thing is that obviously they've got some trading in the game. But at the same time, you don't need to be connected online all the time to trade stuff.
I can understand why, if you're really worried about piracy and you're wanting to verify that it's genuine, that you'd want it to phone home every now and again.
Yes.
Mm. Yeah.
But in order for it to be constant, why would you really need that? I do have some mates who are playing it.
Yeah.
Or they were wanting to play it and they've been, you know, keeping track of everything. And it does sound, for all the world, like, you know, apart from the server issues, the game was not done yet. They were describing various bugs of, let's see, one I was reading today, which was, if you don't fund the roads to 100% of their requirement, apparently they instantly break, or, you know, close to instantly. They don't run down gradually. They just go, or pathfinding for vehicles, like if you send, if there are three fire engines go to the same location, the third one never arrives because it can't get past the second one.
Hey, what?
You know, there are things like that where it, I'm just reading them and I'm thinking, years ago when I was programming, these are basic things I was trying to, you know, figure out ways around in, you know, AI. And for a game in, you know, 2013 to be having them, it's just, what on earth were you doing?
It's all kind of interesting in a way that what's happened in the past week with SimCity, because the most I know about is I was listening to an Idle Thumbs podcast from either end of January, beginning of last month, and a bunch of them got into the beta. And they were extremely excited about the game, is all I can say. Their emotions were running high in anticipation.
It's what's annoying people so much. The issues that are there with it are detracting from what is, by all accounts, really damn good. And that's what's, you know, why it's getting so much noise.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's selling quite, you know, very well. What was it? Second behind Tomb Raider in the charts this week in the UK. So it's doing really well, but they really need to get it sorted.
Meanwhile, the SimCity server issues have managed to slightly sweep under the carpet the Dead Space 4 rumor mill.
Yeah.
False accusations, it's true accusations.
It's going to be a shame if it's not going to happen, because I'd have thought that'd have been a perfect title for the next gen.
I think it's a bit. How do I put it? It's crap on their part. Because it's kind of saying, oh, well, there's nothing we can do to improve things. So there is. If you're worried about the amount you're spending on it, streamline your development process, streamline the marketing that you do, actually make sure that you target the marketing properly. I've got some issues, I think, with games marketing at the moment, in that they really are not targeting their markets or what they think are their markets properly.
No, And when it comes to, with you saying about targeting, when it comes to Dead Space 4, if there is a one, will you actually listen to the fans of the series? The fans of the series want suspense.
Yes.
They want the scares.
They want, you know, they want a sci-fi, horror, third-person, you know, shooter, yes, but also just, you know, a lot going on. Look at the first two games. Look at what, you know, what people really liked from them. When I played the demo of the third, why the hell am I fighting human troops? And why am I, you know, I'm slogging through this snow. Oh, the snow is thick. It's cold. There's a strong wind. I hold down the run button. Suddenly I'm jogging.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's what's put me off Dead Space 3. I mean, you guys know I'm not a particularly fond fan of horror games. I'm not particularly fond of zombie games. I'm not mocking them. I'm not knocking them at all. I just don't like them. I just don't like the genre, whatever you want to say.
Okay.
However, the original Dead Space and Dead Space 2, I freaking loved.
Yeah.
I loved the suspense from it. I loved how it made me jump. And I don't like things that make me jump normally. But there was just something about it that really got under my skin and made me want to play more. And then I've seen the reviews of Dead Space 3 and I've seen videos and I'm like, oh, it's gone. Bugger.
It's Call of Dead Space.
EA have also recently said that there's currently no plans to bring any download content for Mass Effect 3, the Wii U version, as well. So,
yeah, awesome! That makes it the bestest version!
They forced in the alternative endings anyway that were created.
Yeah, couple that with the fact that it's pretty much the same cost as the entire trilogy on the other consoles.
Yeah, that was a bit glaring walking into the shop. Oh, look, there's 1, 2, and 3 in a box set for about 40 quid, and there's the Wii U version of 3 for 45. It's like, no.
I know there's a certain vehemence held against EA especially with, was it last year when this whole, like, voting for America's, like, worst company ever sort of thing that was happening somewhere online, NEA, yeah, right near there.
There are worse.
Yeah.
Do you reckon this is EA's way of getting us back?
I don't know. It's just that...
Oh, you that of us? Right. We'll screw the DRM. See what you...
in terms of decision-making that was making sense in the past 5 or more years... Everything was running okay up to about sort of say Dead Space 2. I'd even say Dragon Age 2, though I would question some of the reuse of levels in that game.
Yeah.
Everything was kind of fine sort of around Mass Effect 2. So between Visceral and BioWare, everything was fine. The sports games were okay. You know, nothing. I mean, so up to about. Yeah, everything was set a little fine, and then this past year it's just been like, what are you guys doing? Don't do that. No, don't advertise it in that way. No, don't don't ask the developers to do these sorts of changes to the game, making it drastically different from the previous iterations, thus sort of taking away from all it was. And no.
It seems to me that the money people were let into the room.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is a problem.
Should never let the money people.
Never let the money people into the room.
And not only that, but they also said, "Hey, have you heard about this DLC and everything like that? Isn't it great? Did you know we can actually sell things to people after we've sold them the game?" And you go, "Oh God, no."
I kind of like DLC, and I think one of the issues.
A DLC. My issue with DLC is not DLC itself. I've really liked a lot of the DLC for, say, you know, the Mass Effects. Apart from the first one, which was a bit arse.
Yeah.
As in the DLC.
Yeah.
I would just say, you know, I'm a big fan of the games and everything. But, yeah, when it comes to a lot of the other, you know, types of things that they're trying to wedge in, no, it's like, come on. You're just trying to sell, you know, like in the multiplayer packs where you can buy skills and new weapons and you can get them with points you earn in the game, but then you can also buy them for Microsoft points or, you know, on PSN. And the whole things that where they've done, you can unlock more or less, you know, complete skill tree unlocks on some of the sports titles. By, you know, spending money on them. And it's just, why would you do that?
Do you know what horrified me, like, a year or so back when I was beginning to not feel so happy with EA? It was, I played my first NHL game, that was NHL 12, and it was the tie-in components for that they had with Virgin Gaming. Now, if anyone knows Virgin Gaming, Virgin Gaming isn't about playing regular old video games. It's actually about gambling. And it was just the fact that it was a sports game that had gambling facilities built into it. And it was just so frigging dodgy to me from like a moral and ethical point of view. Because if there's one thing you get people hooked to an extent on they'll play video games for ages and ages. And it's always the problem with sort of like, if we're not things like microtransactions, and then of course getting people to gamble for real money on a game. Is actually perhaps taking advantage of a weakness that they do have. That's just,
I'm just reminded of The Simpsons. Is it illegal to bet on sporting events? Say so, yes, it is. Oh.
I think.
With gaming and gambling, to me, gaming that's a good kind of gaming. Mm. Gambling that's a bad kind of gaming.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm. Okay, I'm going to move us on to our last bit of news for the week. So after talking in our James Henry episode about Orson Scott Card having a Superman comic coming out soon and all the uproar that was happening over this, last week the artist for Card's Superman story in the Adventures of Superman anthologies said, "Nah, I've had enough, I'm leaving."
And good for him.
The artist was called Chris Sprouse. I think it's Sprouse. Yeah, Chris Sprouse. And he released a statement and he said, "It took a lot of thought to come to this conclusion, but I've decided to step back as the artist on this story. The media surrounding the story reached the point where it took away from the actual work, and that's something I wasn't comfortable with. My relationship with DC Comics remains as strong as ever, and I look forward to my next project with them." Sprouse's departure, however, means that Carr's story will not be appearing in the first volume of Adventures of Superman. And DC are obviously now having to look for a new artist to attach to Card's story. That's if anyone actually wants to do it. I mean, maybe Card could just draw it himself. I don't know what his drawing capability is.
Little stick men.
Yeah.
I was thinking, except it just would then, we'd just all compare it to XKCD and it would come off worse.
XKCD is skillfully done. It's beautiful.
Exactly.
Beautiful stuff. But that actually,
the little hat for a start.
Yeah. But I mean, I think it's just I don't know what kind of contract DC have signed with Card for this 10-page story essentially. But if it's not too tight, I'd be wondering about whether or not I'd want to keep him on at this point, because there's still the possibility that even once he has an artist and his 10 pages published in one of the other volumes of the anthologies, it's like, well, is it actually going to be boycotted still anyway? It probably will be, considering the vehemence that various individuals, stores and organisations were kind of crying out with a few weeks ago.
By the way, if there is anybody listening from DC Comics, there is always one option. You could drop Card completely and hire Emily.
Oh, thanks. No.
No?
No pressure.
I don't think I could write a Superman comic.
Really?
Why?
He's too nice. And his...
You just focus on Lex Luthor or something.
Day in the life of Lex Luthor.
You could do a story like that. Superman 3. With the faked kryptonite. Or there's a missing element, so they just put something else in. Yeah. And it turns him evil. And you can tell, because he looks a bit dark and he's got shadows under his eyes. And he's surly. He's Surly Man, not Superman.
I know, I think I'd rather do something that was like A Day in the Life of Lex Luthor. Just him his thing.
You could come up with another official reason why Lex Luthor hates Superman.
Yeah.
Because as far as I'm aware, Lex Luthor has never had like a single reason why he hates Superman.
It's multifaceted. It's always,
yeah.
The loathing, it runs deep. Also, I wouldn't perhaps write a Superman story, because I probably wouldn't be able to talk to one of our friends ever again because of how much he hates Superman. I don't hate Superman, I just don't think I could write Superman.
No, because he likes the death of Superman.
Oh, that's true. So if I write the one... If I write the one...
He likes the one where the character dies.
Yeah, so if I write the one comic where Superman ends up rather dead... Then it'd be fine. The friendship will be able to remain, and everyone will be able to go on with their lives, except Superman in his fictional world, because he'd be dead.
Is he your friend Grumpy Cat from the internet? I don't like Batman, apart from that one story where he gets his spine snapped. I really like that one.
This particular friend is very fond of Flash comics and Green Lantern stuff, so... That's where his loyalties lie. It's not with Superman. I think it's going to be difficult to perhaps get another artist involved with card story.
Like you were saying, who else would they get onto it? How much is all this costing? What do they have invested in it? What were they going to be doing with this? Because if it's just a 10-page strip...
That's in an anthology.
Yeah, that's in an anthology. You see,
it's a lot of effort, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a lot of effort for 10 pages of comic.
Were they thinking, because he's an established author, they can put these in supplements for schools or, something like, can they use it for promotional work in some way? Or, outreach, which would be ironic considering, the issues that people have with Scott Card.
Hmm.
So, just why... why persevere? Why couldn't they just, you know, is it a big contract for some reason? I would seriously be looking at just,
It's not like it would, I would say, necessarily make crazy money either. Ooh. On the return once it was published.
An idea, just to rub salt in the wound, but have a storyline where Lois accidentally gets turned into a man. Just to rub salt in the wound.
I think I'm gonna move this on to our main discussion.
I think best hard. Yeah.
Why can't Lois Lane turn into Doomsday and just rip his head off?
or do you know what? Forget that. She marries Darkseid or something. Darkseid. Have you pronounced it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they have little kids.
Yeah. Piss off Superman.
I'm not entirely sure which one's worse of those two ideas.
Yeah, exactly. it's a fabulous idea. That's what it is.
Lois Lane actually is from Krypton, and it was Superman's sister. Dun, dun, dun!
It's like the end of Old Boy.
Okay. All right. Out of interest, now that we're moving on to our main discussion of this week, who could pronounce the lady involved's surname? Because
Sarkeesian?
Sarkeesian? Okay, we'll go with that. So, tropes versus women in video games, the first episode, which was looking at Damsel in Distress, well, part one of this episode, was released last week. The videos have been sort of orchestrated and are being presented by Anita. Say the name.
Sarkeesian.
Anita. They've been presented by the lovely Anita of Feminist Frequency. This was...
The fault with her name is with us. It's not with her name.
Yeah. We're from England. It starts to get a bit complicated when names fall outside of regular sort of English surnames. We're like, yep. We'd like to pronounce it properly and all that, but unless we hear it and it's repeated to us about 20 times, it's not happening.
No.
So we're sorry, Anita, if you're listening, which I doubt. But anyway, the Tropes vs. Women video games, which is a series of 12 videos. I'm not sure if they're all in separate parts, but it was part one that was released last week for the Damsel in Distress trope video. It's being filmed off a budget that was created from a Kickstarter campaign, which originally raised $158,922. Obviously, some of that would have been taken away by Kickstarter as fee. And coming for something like 3%. Or something of the total funded is usually taken by Kickstarter.
Well, several thousand from what I saw.
Yeah. The original goal had been $6,000, and she was only going to make like a couple of videos, but because obviously so many people pledged, they had a huge load of stretch goals, and eventually ended up they were going to make 12 episodes. I actually put some money in after seeing the misogynistic outpourings of overprivileged male teeny boppers on the assholes and perhaps probably a lot of men as well on the internet. I was just like, you know what, if it's going to piss you off for these videos to be made, I'll quite happily put some money in.
You mean people are actually protesting about this being made?
Yes.
Oh yeah.
It was the most ridiculous and disgusting act of hatred to happen on internet last year. Well, one of them certainly. Her site got sort of fudged over, I think, a few times. She already had some videos on YouTube because her sort of brand sort of program thing, her Feminist Frequency, has been running for a while, and she'd wanted to make some, you know, big proper videos for once. And the virile of the comments that were being made on her YouTube videos were just disgusting.
Really nasty. The all kinds of threats that you would expect from, you know, threatened, insecure, wankerish males who want to put a woman in her place.
Which doesn't exist anyway, because there is no place.
Well, exactly, but it's what she needs is a good shag. I mean, to put it very, very, very politely.
She was so epically trolled.
Yeah, it's like it was one of those. It's like if I could punch my Y chromosome, I would have.
To be honest,
I really need to read more, don't I, on the net?
Yeah,
I need to get out more.
It's like, oh Jesus, but yeah, she angered a lot of very insecure people whose basic thing was, how dare she raise this? And don't you know that things are sexist against men too? Making us the heroes and all masculine all the time.
Is it, brain about to explode. What?
Yeah, that this is how smart it all was. How smart and balanced all the criticism was.
It came to the stage of that a counter group decided to raise money to make a sort of Tropes versus Men video series, or at least a video. And they raised some money, nowhere near as much as Arcadian, but enough of their total on Indiegogo. And then from an article that I found on GameRanks, and we'll be linking to that in the write-up for this episode, the author had tried to track down the creators of Tropes vs. Men or whether or not they were actually working on the videos. And it's looking like they aren't working on the videos, and having promised to give some of the money, if not all of the money, to charity, there's signs that that didn't happen after an email to one of the charities that they, Tropes vs. Men, lot had said, oh, they donated money to. The charity said, no, we ain't had any money from this group.
To the extent that that charity is thinking of legal action.
Yes. So it's just kind of like, wow. Whereas Anita's actually gone and released her first video. Mm. And I would say at a reasonable time after the fundraiser, because the fundraiser happened last summer. And 12 kind of like, because let's see, the first episode is just over 20 minutes. Well, I say first episode, the first part of the first episode is just over 20 minutes. So I'm not entirely sure how long the second part's going to be, but we're looking at over 30 minutes worth of, episode, basically, for each of the 12. So it's
Because she's actually researching and putting it all together and writing it and presenting it and producing.
And I have to say, you can tell that from the first video. I actually watched it this morning, and I have to say I was rather impressed. It was really interesting. I liked how much research she had done. I liked the history as well.
I think before we discuss the kind of the actual substance of the video, there's one thing that's also come up with the people that were a bit borderline anti these videos. It's like, oh, it doesn't cost this much to make these videos. I want to call bullshit on that. You guys, these people, you've been saying these things, you have never tried to produce video content. As somebody who has, as somebody who's had to budget for a couple of things now, and tried to make things without a budget, it does cost that. Basically, if you look at 159,000, which actually she doesn't even have, because so many thousand of that was taken off, so maybe we're looking at like 155,000, whatever. Anyway, divide that between 12, whatever, you're looking at about maybe $13,000 an episode, or around 8,700 quid.
Bear in mind that that's how much that she raised, not what the goal was.
So you're looking at about 8,700 episodes. That's to cover pre-production. So that's the research. That's the script writing. That's probably getting some agreements together to be able to use some stock footage, that sort of thing. Then there's the production. So actually film it. That's probably that because she's not on location and that she's actually, I would say, in a green screen environment by the looks of things.
Yeah.
Probably the least expensive aspect of it, because they haven't got any complicated camera setup going on. So that's probably where they've managed to make some savings. But on the post-production, no, that would have cost a lot. Actually having somebody edit it that well and coming up with the visuals to go with it. And actually working in all the footage properly, and that does cost it. And then it is that footage, it is that archive footage, getting the rights to secure that legally, it would cost a bit. And I don't believe she's actually editing these things herself, is she? Or is she?
No idea.
But regardless, if you were actually looking at the amount of time you'd have to spend on editing this, even if it was somebody who was a professional in kind of like the beginning of their career, you would be paying them a fair bit to edit this amount of footage.
Yeah.
I think the problem with budgeting up cost is that, you know, on one end you have, you know, Hollywood kind of production where, you know, everything's all nice, smooth, swanky, you know, and everything that costs absolutely millions. And people don't understand where that money goes to. And you also get shoestring budget, which, you know, is done by talented people that looks like it's a lot better than done for free. So as an audience, the video is designed to make it look as good as possible based upon any number of factors. So thinking that, oh, she should have used a lot less money doing that is a bit of a misnomer, really.
Mm. Yeah.
I'm saying that the cost that she's probably looking at per episode, no, actually that does make perfect sense. It would cost that much. But on to the actual substance of the video. As we said, it was looking at the damsel in distress trope. It just made me frown a lot. A great deal, not because I was disagreeing with her, but I was just like, oh yeah, and oh god, no, yes, I remember now, and I hate this, and it was a painful 23 minutes. Painful.
Yeah. It's like, oh dear, oh. Yeah.
Oh.
One of the most painful bits was that Double Dragon.
Oh god, yeah. I used to play that. I should have been hung and quartered for that.
Well, I used to play Double Dragon 2 as well. I mean, it's, as far as I'm concerned, I don't necessarily blame the creators for doing it, basically because most of the creators were more in it for the gameplay, for making a game and for making money, not doing a decent representation. I know that's a bit of a cop-out.
Mm.
And, you know, I would quite happily play something that actually used a very, very different trope. Heck, if it was, Peach saving Mario, as long as it had, you know, good gameplay,
then
I would play it. I would have no problem playing that.
Going back to which was some of the worst...
Can I just say that in Super Mario Bros. 2, that obviously the European and American version, my favourite character on that was always Peach. Every time.
That was the thing that blew my mind. I've not played the new Super Mario Brothers games on Wii.
Yeah.
The fact that they have four-player mode available, and you have two different colour Toad characters. What the hell is going on there? It's like, come on.
I have to admit, I was a bit disappointed that Paper Mario and weren't mentioned.
Well, to be honest, it's the Mario RPGs in essence, because there is Super Mario RPG on the...
She did mention the other non-main series stuff like the Super Smash and
Kart.
I was just kind of like, well, you could have mentioned the RPGs a bit, especially the Paper Mario that came out on the Wii, which is the one I've played the most extensively. And Peach is kick-ass in that. I mean, she's lost and everything for a bit, but as are all the characters. And then finally she's allowed out and she kicks butt.
I mean, to be honest, throughout all of games, when I have a chance to play as a woman rather than a man, I take that chance. Even like on, you know, Mario Kart on the N64, well, Mario Kart 64, I would always play as Peach.
Was weight an issue in the
game? It was to a certain extent, but you know, obviously Peach would have been one of the lighter characters.
Yeah.
I know in the SNES version they had different characteristics, and yes. but I always chose Toad on SNES Mario Kart.
See, I was always Yoshi.
I only started playing the Mario Kart games with Double Dash on the Cube. Hmm. I had no real preference, though I tended towards Peach. And then on Mario Kart for the Wii, I played as Thingy from Mario Galaxy.
Oh, Rosalina.
Rosalina. Yeah. I tend to play as Rosalina.
I will just say, when it comes to Mario Kart, the only game that exists is the Super Nintendo original. that's my contribution.
Okay. Look at you guys saying about the sort of Double Dragon stuff being the worst. Well, that, yeah, from a violence point of view, that is kind of bad. Mm.
Just the fact it hadn't been rejigged or anything. The fact that a game in 2012 starts off with the anonymous blonde girlfriend of the main character being punched in the stomach and then hoisted over her shoulder and carried off.
Yeah. I mean, that was pretty bad. But then again, the footage they had, was it Dragon Lair? Dragon Slayer?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, but that was cringy in a whole different
I know, but way. That was just... I couldn't believe it. It was...
Dragon's Lair was...
Oh, jeez.
The thing is, Dragon's Lair was meant to be cheesy. So yeah,
it was meant to be cheesy.
I can kind of defend it.
But I mean...
A bit.
It was also supposed to be a game, but really it just turned out to be a few button presses of, quick, turn left now, turn right now.
Ooh. Yeah, it was a Don Bluth demo.
Mm. I think it was her costume. If she'd been acting like that and her costume had been a bit less revealing...
I mean, I think at one point, because she does actually kind of talk about Nintendo doing it a lot.
Yeah.
And there's obviously, you know, counterpoints to that where it's like Samus and, you know, she's a strong, independent woman apart from arguably in Metroid Other M. Or Metroid.
But again, there's like 11 more episodes.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So I'm you know, I completely agree with her, you know, in the analysis that, you know, these tropes are happening far too often, but I think you know there are other ones that, you know,
there are other ones that sort of
ditch the paradigm almost.
Yeah.
I was pleased that she did play that part of the Ocarina of Time TV advert.
Yeah.
Mm.
Whereas, wilt thou save the girl or play like one? Because girls are rubbish, aren't they, boys? Oh,
Jesus. It's daft, isn't it?
Yeah,
but then I was really shocked about the Rare game that got turned into Blood Star Fox. Because that looked really, really cool. I was watching the trailer and I was like, hey, this is cool. I've never seen that before. What's that? And then it suddenly was Star Fox. I was like, no way.
Star Fox Ventures is like one of the most downrated friggin' Star Fox games ever.
Not to mention probably one of the worst Rare titles.
Yeah. And it's like, it was no bloody wonder now, having seen what it originally was meant to be, they actually turned out to be an absolutely, utterly appalling game. It makes perfect sense now.
Mm. But I actually quite liked the premise of that Dinosaur Planet, was it called?
Yeah, Dinosaur Planet.
Yeah.
I actually quite liked that, and I liked the main character as well.
And Crystal's costume, original costume... Yeah, it was skirtified, but you know what? It looked a damn sight better than...
than the one belly, in the massive crystal.
Sort of, yeah, sort of belly dancer kind of thing.
Am I right in thinking that on Star Fox Assault, because that was done by Namco instead, they did have Crystal as part of the team? Am I right in thinking that?
I think she might have appeared in another one, but I'm not entirely sure. But Dinosaur Planet, though. Yeah. I mean, the fact that it could have been just this cool game... about a female character trying to save her planet from... Because it would be, you know, sort of evil forces and stuff. And it's just like, oh, the game that could have been. It makes me wonder how many other projects where somebody's put forward a female protagonist have actually not
been
seen... turned into a male or just not seen the light of day. It makes me worry a little bit because...
But then, to be fair, to see the history of Super Mario Bros. 2... The fact that Peach is a player build character was just a fluke, wasn't it?
Yeah.
In essence, yeah.
Which is just bizarre.
They accidentally fixed one of their big cock-ups. And they've spent the last 20-odd years trying to make up for it.
Well, I mean, to be honest, I mean, she was talking about the whole sort of, like, situation with, like, Zelda in the Zelda games and just how, well, she tends to be a bit more proactive and... sort of has abilities compared to Peach, the fact that she still ends up quite often just being kidnapped at the end of the day anyway.
Especially as soon as she turns back into the princess.
Yeah.
Now, I will just say the Zelda games to me are the biggest, you know, they're the glaring error in this whole thing, because the main character, you know, who is always a version of Link.
Yeah.
He's basically an empty vessel.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He could be male or female. It wouldn't matter.
I was actually thinking, you know, if you girlified, not necessarily girlified, but if you made Link as a woman, how much different would Link look?
Not that much. Certainly not.
Because, I mean, he has fairly longish hair, anyway, yeah. Usually.
I was just thinking of all those examples where it's been, say, you know, well, it's mostly been fathers, you know, who have hacked, you know, one Nintendo game or another.
Yeah.
So their daughters could play as a female character. Like, I think it's definitely one of the Zelda games has been hacked.
Yes.
By by a dad. And all it's basically done is changed all the
sprites.
The gendered, you know, the gendered terms in the game. So it could, you know, to turn it to she instead of he.
Yeah.
And it works just the same. So I honestly do not understand why we still have a, you know, rock solid, set in stone, male Link.
I think to a certain extent, I think the problem is that gamers, as we've witnessed, they're notoriously bad for taking criticism of their, you know, their thing, that, you know, gaming.
No, we're not. Oh. Damn you.
So they will defend it against absolutely everything, whether it's legitimate or not.
Mm.
And I think that, to a certain extent, is a really bad thing when it comes to actual progressive ideas.
I know gamers are too knee-jerk, but to an extent, that's because we've had to put up with so much idiotic crap over the years.
True, but by the same token, are comics fans quite the same?
I think any fandom, you know, where something is theirs, and that, you know, they've had to put up with outside pressure or, you know, outside or flawed viewpoints. I mean, good God, I remember when, you know, I was just starting college, and it was stuff like, you know, this is going to age me here. I was just starting college, and there were things like Street Fighter 2.
Mm. Yay!
Super Nintendo. And it was the whole thing, because especially ITV around that time, and the Daily Mail, but then that's the Daily Mail, they never change. They just grow older and fail to die. We're going on about, look how violent this is making our children, and, you know, how addicted they are to it. Yeah. And it's of that kind of, oh, just, you know, when you're having to put up with that, and it's, you know, should we restrict sales or, you know, certain types of games? And you look at the games that were available at that point, it's like, oh, come on, seriously?
I mean, part of the problem is that women are gamers too. So it's like when they say that half, you know, the criticism against, you know, female protagonists as like, no, you can't change things like that. And it's like, hold on, half of gamers are women.
Yeah.
In fact, why can't we change things like that? Very close to 50%, isn't it?
Yeah.
Well, looking at today's generation of games, I mean, Tomb Raider has just blown my mind, you know, being able to play Lara Croft properly without having to, what's the word?
Instead of playing some kind of sexualized doll.
Yeah, she is a real character. She is. I mean, I like the very first Tomb Raider, but after that, it seemed to just get a bit silly.
So I just want to go back to the Zelda thing a minute, because I do have an idea for a game, sort of concept wise, where Zelda doesn't have to be kidnapped, and you could play as Link and Zelda.
Mm.
What you do is you just end up with a game where parts of it are played by Link, parts of it are played by Zelda, and their actions combine to overcome. Well, so it's going to be Ganondorf, isn't it? In order to deal with him.
I've got to admit, I always wanted a version of Ocarina of Time where basically you kind of go into the Temple of Time and get sealed away in the Sacred Realm, and then you have to take over a Zelda and actually play as Sheik.
That would have been awesome.
But going back to the Nintendo bit as well.
Yeah.
It's quite interesting, the fact that Nintendo is stuck with this thing with Peach and stuff.
Do you know what? I think we're going to have to, at this point, mention the cultural thing there in Japan. It's a Japanese company.
Yeah, but on the same token, Sega, you had games like Streets of Rage, where you had Blaze, yeah, who kicked ass.
Sorry, Sega have always been a more American company than Japan, though.
Yeah.
I think in terms of gaming especially, part of the problem is that developers really don't like to rock the boat too much.
Also...
Is developers don't like to rock the boat too much? Or marketers, yeah, and boardroom members don't want to rock the boat too much?
Them more than anybody. But, you know, say for example, Nintendo, the reason why that we have New Super Mario Bros. Is basically because it's worked since the 80s, and it continues to work.
Yeah.
Admittedly, we can change the formula up, but by the same token, you know, they just don't want to do that. They want to have Mario as the core, you know, person, because they're not confident that they could actually do the same if Peach was a... I'm pretty confident that it'll be very, very playable, even with Peach.
I think it's always the sort of the boss people and the marketers going, oh, you can't sell it like that. And it's like, no, if you put in as much bloody effort, yeah, as you did into selling the regular Mario games into something that breaks the mold a bit, it bloody well would sell. You're just talking out your ass.
But, I mean, I hope a future episode is actually going to be on when, you know, basically...
There is a write-up on the Kickstarter page for it that says which...
All right.
Which tropes they're covering.
Okay, but I hope... Basically, cutesifying female characters. I hope that's one of them.
Oh, yeah, it's covered at some point, yeah.
The fact that, you know, Peach does star in her own game, but it's so girly that it alienates everybody.
I am curious how much of the problem with gaming is it's not only a general entertainment problem, because, you know, these tropes... Mm. You know, it can be just as applicable to TV series, movies, you know, all of that kind of thing. But how much of it is a problem created by programming being seen as a male, you know, problem? You know, design, mathematics, you know, coding, you know, all of that, you know, without being, you know, projected as such a male thing, preventing, you know, turning off you know, a lot of women from thinking, I might try that.
Yeah, because I mean, even was it Tiga's latest report for sort of like, yeah, state of basically things in the games industry over here, like how many women are actually working in development roles rather than HR, and the figures are still, you know, you're looking at well less than 30% of development staff are female. And of course, if you haven't got women in the sort of more powerful creative positions to actually say, actually, no, we should do this, we should do that, then there's not a strong enough voice there to basically stop the repetition of these tropes anyway. I mean, I think probably one of the reasons why the current Tomb Raider, everyone's liking the character of Lara, is because you had Rihanna Pratchett.
All hail Rihanna Pratchett.
Yeah. In case you didn't know, Terry Pratchett's daughter. You know, she's
and awesome in her own right.
Yeah, awesome in her own right, and she's a great writer when it comes to sort of multimedia, like video games. And she's, as far as I can tell from what I've been hearing, everyone's liking what she's done to help develop the character of Lara away from previous games.
By actually giving her a character instead of making her a, I don't know, like a sexy female version of Bruce Wayne.
I have to admit, I wouldn't mind playing a Grand Theft Auto game with a female as the main character.
Yes! Why? Especially with GTA 5 has three characters in.
Yeah. And not one of them is female.
Yeah, they're all men!
Heck, I wouldn't mind even like a Call of Duty game, or, you know, some other kind of war game where you're actually dealing with female soldiers as well.
Yeah, because the situation as a woman operating either in everyday stuff or the not so everyday is that what happens, it's still genderized and stuff will be different. Like, if you're a female character in a war game, you're in a war zone, well, in both America and over here, women aren't allowed on the front lines, so you'd be in a slightly different situation. And obviously the conflict could come to you, but then it's like, will they be as prepared? Will they have access to the right equipment? There'll be different dangers and stuff going on.
I have to say, when it comes to the military, it's the military's fault for making guns that need to be operated with penises. Because that's the obvious reason why. It's like,
Shooting from the hip.
But then, so going back to the Grand Theft Auto angle, though, it would be really interesting to have a female character, because the situation of women in crime situations, as long as they're not a prostitute, if they're actually family members of criminals, or they're a female pimp, or they're a female drug dealer or something, that there are different things happening because of the fact that it's still a patriarchal society. So their reactions...
Bear in mind that you could actually work in mechanics of basically trying to flirt your way out of getting a ticket with a police officer type thing.
That'd be kind of good. Actually, to be honest, they could they could balance it out a bit more by having the old gay officer that you have to deal with if you're playing as a male character and you flirt with them in order to get away. But again,
Why not?
You actually did that in Assassin's Creed Liberation on the Vita.
Really?
You had three costumes you could change into. One was the assassin costume, one was because you were trying to infiltrate the towns where the slaves were, it was a slave's costume, and the other was a lady's costume. And if you were wearing the lady's costume, you can actually charm guards and that to try and protect you and stuff, which actually worked really well as a good game mechanic.
That works in that context.
Yeah. But... You know, it was good. It was good fun.
I just think there is scope for having female characters, and the fact that the people who don't like femship, you know,
idiots.
Yeah, this just like
femship is awesome. Jennifer Hale is fantastic.
It's the best way to play the Mass Effect games because of the issues with cultural expectations. Having a woman in a strong role. Do what she does, or he, if you're playing as a guy, but having Shepard as a character doing what they do and then playing as a female character because of contextually having the idea of having a woman in this world with that much power, with that much drive, is actually quite an alien concept. So it's the fact that it's the exoticness of it, it actually makes it quite interesting to actually take on board.
And it should not be exotic at all.
That is true.
That's the issue.
Well, I say it's just nice to be able to play as a female character as a woman.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know why, but I've always, as I've said, I've always kind of went for a female character over a male one when I get the chance to.
I
know there's a lot of people, a lot of guys that actually, you know, have the same thing out there.
It's a bit different because when you move outside of the first person shooters and the third person shooters. It's nice to be able to actually choose your gender for once. Mm. Just play as whoever you want to play as rather than being set down in a particular role.
I was just thinking that it's a bit interesting in that most beat 'em ups I'll play a female character. Mm. RPGs, if I have the option, I've played through KOTOR and I've played through the Mass Effect, FemShep. Well, obviously not KOTOR's as FemShep. That would be awesome. But, Jennifer Hill is in the original KOTOR.
Okay.
She's a Bastilla. But, you know, all that's interesting. But when it comes to things like Oblivion and Morrowind and Skyrim, I go for either Khajiit or Argonian. Because I go for a different species. Ah, why not?
That makes sense. I kind of go through phases in the Elder Scrolls games as I sort of start off with like maybe a human character, work my way to maybe playing as like a wood elf, and then at some point I'll play as a Khajiit or an Argonian, depending on, you know, whether I want to be Fifi or if I like the idea of swimming underwater.
You know, I think I figured it out. I think because the white male is seen as the norm. Mm. First choice I get, I go as a woman. Second choice I get, I go as a black guy. So I think I just basically don't necessarily want... Well, when I'm playing a video game, I don't want to feel normal.
You want pure escapism. You exactly. Really want to escape the everyday.
Escape from me, in essence.
Yeah. I still want to play as a guy in video games.
It'll be interesting psychology in computer games. Not necessarily about mechanics, but, you know, kind of the stories and behaviour and stuff.
As I've said before, when it comes to psychologists, you know, any amateur psychologists out there, the way I play Mass Effect is My femme Shep is Paragon. My man Shep, when I play him, he's the renegade. Go on, analyse that.
All men are bastards.
Yeah.
Wait. So have you played through Mass Effect 2 then to the end as a male Shep?
I've played all three. I've played it as Paragon, femme Shep, and renegade.
I haven't completed a renegade playthrough of 2 yet or anything even. So what does their face end up like at the end? Because if you keep playing as renegade and don't use the thingy treatment.
I've got a photo somewhere of my man Shep. Basically, he's got glowing red eyes and orange scars all over his face.
Oh, lovely.
I was actually kind of envisioning something like, Christopher Pike kind of style, like in the original Star Trek when, he gets into the courtroom and it's in that.
Imagine Christopher Pike crossed with a Terminator.
Oh, lordy. But, okay, going back to tropes versus women, the first video is definitely worth watching. You can find it.
It is very good. Well done as well.
We'll be linking to it in the post to accompany this episode.
Looking forward to some new episodes as well.
Yeah. I think it's going to be nice this year, sort of watching a few episodes of this every so often. And yes, the money has been well spent. It's been properly well spent. It looks polished. She's got the right amounts of footage in there to tie in with everything. And she does sound like she knows what she's talking about. I've done stuff to do with gender and video games previously on my degree. And a lot of what she's saying kind of gels with stuff that I studied on my degree. So.
And it's come out at the right time as well because of the whole Women's Day.
Yeah, Women's Day. Yeah, it was interesting. It did get released basically like... Was it the day before International Women's Day or something? So it's just kind of like, that's pretty cool. As just sort of like this evening, where just before we started recording, the video had over 700,000 views, well over. So,
which is bloody impressive.
Yeah.
Just as a matter of interest, did she offer any, like on Kickstarter you get
perks and that? Yeah. I really can't remember. You'd have to check the actual Kickstarter project page.
I think it'd be
page.
Kind of cool to get like a DVD or something. Although chances are it'll be regional.
Well, I think what's good is that she is releasing these episodes for free.
Yeah.
Having made them anyway, so rather than actually compiling them into a paid format, which is a good thing. So she's not trying to make like horrendous amounts of extra money from it.
It's a lot of it's a lot of help, basically, because people can say, have you noticed these things? No? Okay, go have a look at this. See if you disagree.
Yeah.
And, it's handy.
And if you find yourself completely disagree, I mean, it's okay to disagree with bits and dabs that I've got some issues with her views on whether or not men get good representation in games and stuff. I got some issues, but that's a subject for another time. But basically... While you may disagree with your bit of things that she might say, actually most of it, she is making genuine sort of discoverable observations. Like, if you go and play something, having watched it, you will see.
And the important thing is, she's saying these are the problems with female representation in gaming. She's not saying, and it's a bloody utopia for men.
Yeah.
She's not saying it's absolutely perfect, apart from this is what they do with women.
And she's also not saying that, that your favourite games and favourite companies that make them, they're evil men loving women hating bastards. She's not saying that. And the one thing that I actually find quite disgraceful is this idea that you shouldn't be talking about it.
I've never understood that. It makes no sense.
It's something that like sort of certainly feminist movements and stuff have had to deal with, obviously, for like centuries. Don't rock the status quo and all that. And it's just like, well, it's an equality issue. It does need to be talked about,
Sometimes it's good to rock the establishment.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, I believe that is all we've got time for this week. Next week, we should hopefully have Mr. James McLean guesting with us. He is one of the main forces behind the Back to Frank Black campaign, who've been pushing for quite a while to get Millennium either back on our TV screens or into the cinema. That's the Chris Carter series from the 90s that starred Lance Henriksen. So we'll hopefully have him on the podcast next week. So it's good night from...
It's good night from me, Paul Wood. I'm Super Retroid on Twitter and Retroid on Eurogamer.net.
And it's good night from me, Paul, a.k.a. OneArm_Cookie on Twitter. And you can also find me lurking around GameJar.com.
It's good night from me, Paul Blewett. I have a website, paul-blewett.com, and I'm Paul Blewett on Twitter.
And it's good night from me, Emily King. I'm on Twitter at EK6891. You can also stop by my website at ek-creations.com. You can find Nerds Assemble over at www.nerdassemble.co.uk. We're also available on iTunes. You can find us on Twitter at Nerds Podcast. Plus, you can find us on Facebook and Google Plus under Nerds Assemble Podcast. That's it. Good night.
Good night.
Good night.
Night.